St. George's number one station with Washington County's top talk show, The Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
I know you're expecting the Andy Griffin theme, but it's George Benson's birthday. I don't know if Zach is old. Do you remember George Benson on Broadway? Remember the song?
I know the song, but I don't remember him.
Okay. It was a kind of this, it was Motown, kind of a subculture of Motown music that was kind of funky and cool, and this was one of those songs.
Yeah.
Another story about, and by the way, welcome to the Andy Griffin Show. Zach Renstrom is here. So when I was between freshman and sophomore year, they formed a new high school, West Jordan High School, and so all us young underclassmen went over to the new school. And so I'm playing sports. I'm in the band. I played saxophone. And I remember the band director came up to me and she said, well, we're going to start a pep band and I need you to play xylophone or drums. And I'm like, I've never played either one of those. I don't know how to play those. And she's like, oh, you'll learn. If you know music, you'll learn. She said, we need you because your size, because you carry those on your back, those big drums. And but the very first song we learned in the West Jordan High School marching band was this song right here on Broadway.
That's a good one. Yeah.
So now every time I hear it on Broadway, and I saw it today, it was George Benson's birthday. He's 80 years old, by the way. I was like, all right, good stuff.
Yeah, that is a good song. It's got a good beat.
I was going to scat for you, but I think probably we'll not do that.
Okay.
So I'll turn George down. Thank you, George, for serenading us. And thank you, Zach, for coming in today.
Of course. It's good to be here.
And being on the show. I talked with Victor Iverson yesterday about this. The topic on this show, when we have a local political figure, has been over and over and over again, water. But a different kind of the topic, water, than we're having today. It's been we don't have enough water. All of a sudden, after starting from last Tuesday or Wednesday on, we have more water than we could ever dream of here. And the snowpack hasn't melted yet, Zach. What's going on here? What do we need to know?
So we have a phenomenal snowpack. It is wonderful from a water standpoint. But there's
always a but. Here we go.
Yeah, it's the flooding issue. So we have gauges all over. But the one I like to look at was we actually have a camera up on Kolob Reservoir.
Okay.
And we have a pole that is 7 feet tall.
Okay.
And you can go on and look, and we have little markers on that pole, and so we can kind of just easily visualize where the snow is at. Well, that pole is completely covered.
The camera, there is no picture because the snow has covered it.
Well, the camera's above.
Oh, it's
so
above
we still
it. Okay.
Get the camera, but the pole is buried. And
oh,
so up,
wow.
up at Kolob Reservoir, we have about 7 feet of snow.
Wow.
And about 43 inches of water, snow water equivalent. And so that is a significant amount of water. We haven't had that much water up there in years and years and years. And so for the water guy, it's great. For the flood control authority, they're panicking right now.
Hmm.
And so the real question is how will it come off? And so if it comes off nice and slow, our systems can easily handle
we're okay.
that.
Yeah.
The big scare is if we get a really warm rain event, so a rain that comes up from like Arizona, you know, Southern California, where it's really warm, and then that warm rain snows on the snowpack and it puts a lot of energy into the snowpack and melts it quickly.
Fast. Yeah,
that's where we get. That's where like when in 2005 when the homes went in the river and stuff right. like that. That's what right. happened. So the potential's there, and so we're all kind of holding our breath. What could happen?
We'd like to think a lot of progress has been made as far as mitigating some of those situations that happened in 2005, but there are also a lot more, maybe not twice as many people here, but I would say 60% more people that live here than did then. And a lot of those people have never seen it flood here. And a lot of people even built houses in what you would consider a floodplain. So
I think, yeah. And we are much better prepared. Like if you go along the rivers, you see that we call it rip rap. It's basically rocks that line it. And so,
yeah, when I first heard that, somebody said rip rap. I'm like, riff raff? And they're like, no, not riff raff. That's a bad thing.
Yep, rip rap.
Rip rap. Okay.
And it's just basically how they put the rocks in there and control the erosion of the banks. And there's actually a lot of science that goes into those. And a lot of people just see the top part of it, but it actually goes underneath and behind quite a ways. And that'll help channel it. And then the other thing is, from an emergency standpoint, we're just better prepared, too. So, like last time when there was flooding that occurred, a tree will die, fall over, and then it'll just sit there. And then a big flood will bring that down.
Right.
those big trees come down and they go to like a bridge and they'll get stuck.
And make them clog it, basically.
They'll clog it and cause a lot of problems. And so the river will try to redirect, and that's where we have a lot of problems. Now we have it set up where the emergency operation in cities and stuff like that instantly have contractors that they can call, that they will get track hose out there almost immediately. And those big track hose will reach down with their claw, basically, and grab those big trees and pull it out. And so it's already set up that when the call goes out, like a contractor will know, I need to be at this bridge and I'm going to stay at that bridge until the flooding's over. The prices are already established, so the contractor knows they're going to get paid and what they need to do. And so it's all lined up. And that's all the way from like Enterprise. I was just talking to their city manager and he's like, no, he says, we have it. We've got some contractors we can call. And so the river's been armored. It's better. We're able to quickly respond to certain things like clogging of it. But I'll tell you, if that river goes, Mother Nature has a way of just doing her own thing.
I was going to say, we can do everything we do, and it's great to prepare for this stuff, and kudos to the people that have done that. But sometimes, I mean, if it floods and Mother Nature brings that water down fast, there's not a lot anybody can do.
No. And it does, as a civil engineer, where some individuals or businesses have been built, I think they're complete morons. Is that too hard of a language?
Ooh, wow. I don't think we've used that word on the show before.
I would cuss, but I don't want to get in trouble by the federal government. But I think I just look at it and I'm like, you build a house next to the Virgin River and you're literally like, I just worry about it.
You know, you're... I'm going to say you're the first person who's been frank about that, because I've had political, you know, mayors and commissioners and things on, and they've said, yeah, I don't know that I would have done that, or they'll say things like that, or yeah, maybe they need to check, you know, be extra prepared and stuff. But you're the first one that's come on and said they shouldn't have done that. That's not smart.
Well, I hope you know by now that I'll call a foul a foul, and I'll call a strike, and I think it's wrong. So it makes me very, very, and the sad, from the political side, what makes me very nervous is someone does something very stupid like that by building a house too close, and there's a variety of reasons why it may have happened, but if it happens, then what's going to happen is our first responders are going to have to go in and put themselves in an astronomically dangerous position to respond to that, and that's that, from a personal standpoint or political standpoint, that's what makes me upset, is that we're putting our first responders in a dangerous situation that they shouldn't have to be in.
There are a lot of things that you can compare that to in life. You know, people get mad at me when I see a person who is able-bodied and they're begging for money or food. I want to help people that are, misfortune has happened to them. But if I see an able-bodied young man and he makes a lot of money panhandling, and I think, you know, you could have a job. This is your choice. And it's the same thing with, you know, that I got a little frustrated last time we flooded. I know it was the last one, 2012 or whatever it was.
2009.
And I just like, you know, we're all supposed to stop everything and give all our money and time and resources to these people whose places have flooded. But they're the ones that made the choice to build there. They're the ones that made the choice to live there. They're the ones that, and so I'm with you, Zach. I get a little bit frustrated sometimes because, you know, people expect us to stop and help them when they're the ones that made some pretty poor decisions along the way. So at the same time, maybe someday I'll have it happen to me and be like, forget everything I said. I need help. You know, well, I hope not though.
And like, I will say, like in 2005, there were some homes that were flooded where what happened is the river got plugged up because of trees and stuff, and then the river redirected itself almost a couple hundred yards.
Like, and they had, yeah.
That wasn't their fault. And even like when the dam dike collapsed over there in Santa Clara and several homes and business.
Right.
So there's definitely times where flooding occurs that it was just kind of an unforeseen thing, or no one would have even guessed it. But yeah, there's this one home being built, and I won't mention it on the radio, but I just look at that home and I think, man, well, I don't know. I hope they have flood insurance is all I can say.
We had a golden opportunity. It was a few years ago, my wife and I, to buy a house in a neighborhood. and it would have been one of those walkout basements, because the house was on the road, but then there was like a gully behind it, mm-hmm. and you could walk out, and I'd love to put a pool in there, whatever. And I got looking at it, you could see that this was in flood times, probably an area where a lot of water came mm-hmm. rushing down. And I told my wife, I said, I don't think I can build here. I don't think that it would be smart. And it may only flood once every 100 years or whatever. But that one time, what if that one time happens this year or next year or in 5 years or in 10 years? There will be no one to blame but myself. So, yeah. All right, let's talk about our water storage. Sure. Are all the reservoirs full now?
So Sand Hollow and Quella aren't quite full. They're
not
about
quite.
85%. And so okay. we'll definitely fill them up. And so right now we're spilling water is what we say. Mm-hmm. I'd love to have about 5 more reservoirs because I would fill them all up.
Well, that's, yeah.
And that's why we're actually actively building them. And this is a good example of a year that if I had all the reservoirs that we're kind of thinking of building built, we'd fill them all 100% up and have all that water storage. But yeah, this year we'll fill them all up. One thing that is really nice with, and I know people are getting tired of the rain and everything like this, but the soil has just been saturated for a long time. And so that means all that water is percolating down into the aquifers. And so this has been also an amazing year for recharging our aquifers. And so it's from a water standpoint, not a flooding, but of water, this has been a phenomenal year.
Will you explain to people what an aquifer is and what that means that water is going into it? Because I think they're probably listening going, now, what is he talking about?
Basically, it's just water underneath the ground.
Little pockets, right? Or little...
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty spread out, but usually what happens is you have gravel or soil, and there's little pockets of air, and basically instead of having air in that pocket, you have water. Hmm. And sometimes there's cracks that are filled with water, and so it's just basically water that's located underneath the ground. And we it's groundwater or aquifer that's kind of used interchangeably. But throughout the county, we have lots of different ones, and they all act a different way, and they all have their own little personalities. But these are good events because during these drought years, we've been sucking really hard from the groundwater, and we have seen signs of that dropping down. And so this year, we just know it's going to recharge. And like up in Enterprise, where their groundwater is dropping quite dramatically, this will be a great year to really put a lot of water in the aquifer.
I've heard, is Enterprise Reservoir full?
Yeah, they're both spilling right now.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah.
And Baker and...
Spilling.
Yeah.
Gunlock spilling.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have the waterfalls going on right now. And
incredible views, yeah.
There's a lot of people out there enjoying those. And so...
Yeah, like ants on an anthill, that many people.
The Utah State Parks Department manages it, and they have 4 rangers out there. And I think they need probably another 4. And they're beautiful. They're stunning. The tough thing that we have is they're astronomically dangerous.
Right.
And we've had deaths out there, but it's raging water. It's flowing very fast. There's, cliff edges. And after the rock is wet for a while, it starts to get a little bit mossy and a little bit more slick. And then you have people just jumping off of them. And
are people still doing that this year?
I don't know. I was there, I didn't see anybody jumping, but I've seen it. And if they have a very small footprint to hit, if they're going to be...
Yeah, there's rocks in them there in that their water, big ones.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that long ago, 4 or 5 years ago, where somebody dived in and hit their head on that rock, and they never, that was it. They were done.
Yeah.
So
very sad.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the good news is the reservoirs are getting full, not completely full yet, but they're getting there down here at San Hollow and Quail. Warner Valley, we would love to have that reservoir full, except it's not a reservoir yet.
Toker, we'd fill up. Ash Creek's full. We're spilling on Ash Creek.
Wow.
And so if we had them all, we would fill them all. So
what does this mean as far as the big picture drought? I mean, we've had so many years of drought. I've heard you say, I've heard others say, well, it would actually take several years like this one for us to officially end the drought. Is that still true?
I mean, yeah, if you look at the big picture, so if you look at like the Great Salt Lake, Strawberry Reservoir, Lake Powell, Lake Mead, all those reservoirs are going to go up, but like the Great Salt Lake, we're not even going to get to the average this year. Strawberry Reservoir, which is crucial for the Wasatch Front, that's not going to fill this year. Lake Powell is about 150, 180 feet down.
How much will it come up, do you think?
So they're speculating. The Bureau of Reclamation won't come out and say this number, but their range right now is between 35 and 45 feet.
But will that get it up to those docks that are dry right now?
It'll help. Yeah.
It'll help. Okay.
Yeah. But like height will still be out of the water. Like,
yeah.
And so, yeah, it'll probably raise, I think it'll be about 40 feet. When I look at all the data and I kind of say, this is my guesstimate. I think it'll come up 40 feet, which is phenomenal. I mean, that is an astronomical amount of water, but we need 180 feet. And then we also need to fill Lake Mead. And so there was just such a hole to fill. And like the Great Salt Lake, you know, we need at least two or three of these same winter events to fill the Great Salt Lake, Strawberry Reservoir, the same thing. And, so it's great. I'm very grateful for it. We're actually still cloud seeding in certain locations.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. And even next year, the state of Utah has a very, very aggressive plans to continue cloud seeding in areas.
Is that expensive?
It is.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, it depends on how you do it. There's different ways. They have point sources where basically you just go out and you turn on a flame and it's just kind of like a chimney. And those are pretty cheap. But when you put a plane up in the clouds, that's where it gets a little bit more pricey.
Wow.
And so we've been doing it for years and years and years, but they're starting to dial in the science to kind of know which clouds to seed, where to seed.
Hmm.
And the legislature authorized millions and millions of dollars this year for cloud seeding. And so you'll start seeing more of that just across the entire state of Utah.
Is there, I mean, this is a dumb question because they wouldn't do it if it were, but is there a health risk at that kind of impelling of moisture versus natural?
So the question comes up because we put silver iodine in the cloud is what right. It is. And when the tests have all showed that after they go through, the amount they're putting in is very minute. And so then we test the water as it's coming out of the watershed, and the amount is so low the test can't even pick up the silver iodine.
Hmm.
Also with that, like iodine's in our salt. So a lot of times when people use salt, it's the same, and they'll say, you know, fortified with iodine, it's that same mineral.
Okay.
And so I know Seth would probably have a lot to say on this.
Yeah, probably would. Yeah.
but it's been used for years. I mean, it's technology that's been used for over 50 years. And they're starting to utilize it a little bit more. But there is a science between it because you just can't go find, like these clouds today would be, you couldn't do it with these clouds. Right. There really has to be an event where it's already raining. You just kind of make it kick a little bit harder, rain or snowing.
More.
Yeah.
Okay. A little more moisture. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like for now we're okay. Like you said, the real concern now is how fast that water comes mm-hmm. down. There have been charts floating around, probably from your office, about the snowpack. And mm-hmm. One thing I saw said we're the fourth highest snowpack ever. Is that right, or are we higher than that even?
So if you look at the state of – so it's one of those things what you look at. If you look at the state of Utah, we are.
Number four.
Yeah.
Okay. What about down here?
Down here, this would be probably – we are in the top 10%. So I can't remember the exact things, but if you look at the charts and stuff like that, we're in the top 10% of years, which is wonderful. We'll take this every year.
But not ever.
We've had more up at Kolob. We've had more snow than up there than we have right now.
Okay.
So, but it's great.
Okay. The ski resorts are all pretty dang happy, I guess, right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Even Brian Head all the way up through, you know,
they keep on extending their closing date, which is wonderful.
Are you a skier?
I am.
Are you? Okay.
I do enjoy skiing. I don't get up as much as I want, but it's a good activity.
Are you old school two skis? Or,
oh,
or,
yeah. Because
a lot of the young people like to snowboard better.
No, I grew up I'm that old where I grew up to learn how to ski, and I love skiing, and I'm, I'll stick with skiing. I tried snowboarding a couple times, and I just didn't enjoy it as much, and I love skiing, so.
The last time I skied, snowboarding hadn't been invented yet, so that's how long it's been since I was on skis. And
that's a little while ago.
I prefer motorcycles myself.
But they're fun, too. And we should talk about that, by the way, the motorcycles.
Yeah. Are you a motorcycle guy?
Well, what's going on is that Warner Valley, we're doing the land exchange.
Right, yeah.
And so part of that land exchange... So kind of explain, Warner Valley's been talked about as a reservoir for probably 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so the district...
Literally 100 years. I mean, he's not saying a long time. No, literally 100 years they've been talking about it.
And so we're in the process, the water district's in the process of acquiring that land. And we've required all the private inholdings. And so now we need the land from the BLM. The BLM has a mandate from Congress to go up and acquire land that's in the tortoise habitat area, the HCP. And so we're doing a three-way trade where we're going to a private property owner, we're buying his property in the HCP, and then we're going to trade it with the BLM property.
It's like the NBA, it's three-team trade, huh?
It's a, and it's a the private landowner's happy because he's finally getting money for his land. The BLM's happy because they're getting the land that they're required to get because it's critical habitat. And the district's happy that we're going to get a land that we want for a reservoir. Where the ATV uses come up quite a bit is when we sat down with the BLM and said, hey, we need this footprint. The BLM came in and says, well, we want you to take this footprint, which is a little bit wider than we needed. But they didn't want to, they like to have nice straight lines when they manage their land, okay. Which is fine.
Like so, Colorado and Wyoming, right?
Yeah.
Rectangles. Yeah.
So when we came in and look at, so part of it, and you know, we're still in the environmental review process. Some of it went up there on the West Rim. They call it the West Rim Trail up there where a lot of ATV activity is going.
Okay.
So we had a scoping meeting and a lot of people from the ATV community and people with motorcycles came in. They're very, very, very concerned
right.
about the water district acquiring that land where there's traditionally been a lot of ATV use. And so we had a public scoping meeting last night and it was awesome.
Really?
Because usually I go to these meetings, we have them all the time and you show up and there's like 10 people from the extreme environmental community that just wants to shut down everything and get very vocal. Well, last night, I think we had like 500 people from the ATV community. I mean, we really? Had Jeeps lined up outside the library.
Nice.
And these guys were wonderful. They came in there like, listen, we understand the reservoir needs to happen. They're very supportive of that. They were concerned saying, hey, this area up here, we want to make sure it's kept open for ATV use. And it was great for the BLM to hear that. Like, that was a really good message for the BLM to realize that these ATVers are very, very active. They're very concerned about this. And generally, the BLM hears a lot from the environmental groups, and so yeah. it's great for them to hear from this other group. And I really
support
that.
The other side,
it.
Yeah.
Yep.
My son, he's a dirt biker, probably would have been to that meeting, except he lives in Santa Cruz. But he's, yeah, same kind of idea. We want to preserve it. Was there any resolution then to it all?
Well, so it's just a scoping meeting, so there's not a resolution, but it's part of the, the scoping meeting says, what do we need to talk about? And so one of the things from the district standpoint, I think it would be great if it's left open for ATV use. And so when that land is transferred to the water district, there's things that the BLM could put in there that says a restriction that says, hey, this land has to be kept open for recreational use. And I would 100% support that. And that would be the best way to protect that land to keep it open for ATV use.
Awesome. Awesome. He's Zach Renstrom. We're talking water and land today on George Benson's birthday. We'll take a commercial break and then check in with weather. This is the Andy Griffin Show on KDXU.
They say that I won't last too long on Broadway. I'll catch a Greyhound bus for home, they all say. But they're dead wrong, I know they are. Cause I can play this year guitar. And I won't quit.
Guests, hot topics, the latest news. Always on the Andy Griffin Show.
Is there a juicy part in it for me?
Right here on News Radio 890. 92.5 KDXU. Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Andy Griffin. Now, I want to point you to our website, 890kdxu.com. I have a story up there about floods and droughts. For a lot of quotes from Victor Iverson, and I might throw in some extra quotes today from Zach Renstrom in that story. It's the way of living here in the desert, the floods and droughts, and he was saying basically, Victor was saying, he said, look, you got to know if you're going to live in a place like this, mm-hmm. that's the way things are. It's going to be dry, 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 and then one day it's going to start raining and everything's going to flood. And that's the way it is. And if you don't like it, then you need to go, you know, go move to Missouri or something where they don't have as bad a drought as we do.
Yeah.
So it is a drought, but it's our climate is what it is. Really.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They call it the desert for a reason.
Yeah. You were telling me about a friend of yours passed away, kind of a sad deal. Actually had a friend pass away just like, I don't know, 6 days ago or something. A fellow sports writer friend of mine.
I'm so sorry.
We are, unfortunately, Zach, I'm a little older than you, but we're getting to that age where a lot of our friends are passing away and moving on. And this particular friend of mine, Dirk Facer, wrote for the Deseret News, he was on the kidney, he was waiting for a kidney, he had bad kidneys, waiting for a kidney, and it never came. and he passed away. It was sad, and you know, sports writers, we all have big egos. I don't mean like walking around cocky or anything. I just mean you have to have confidence in what you write. You know, you're representing, sometimes it's an NBA game or a college football game or whatever. But I remember one time Dirk Facer, the day after I had covered a game, he called me. And this never happened. He called me at home and said, "Hey, I just want to know, I loved your story. And I like the way he said, turn to phrase is what he said. He said, I wish I could do that," which was ironic because he was really, really good at doing that. Yeah. And I know he could do that. But I guess we're getting old.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that I think that's great. He reached out to you and said that to you because it means a lot. So
it does. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is this individual I went to school with. And yeah, he came out of his work and there was a lady and says, "Take me to the emergency room," and he didn't make it.
Well, so, a heart attack?
What they think. So, yeah, he was 51.
Yeah, my friend Dirk was 59.
Yeah.
So too young to die, for sure.
Sure.
So, yeah. and ultimately, that's what it's all about, right? I mean, I've had Zach on here so many times saying, look, I want to have water so that people that come after me, my children, for instance, can turn on the tap and know that their clean water is going to come out of that tap and they'll be able to live their lives and not have to think about why. Kind of like being an offensive lineman. I was an offensive lineman, and the only time you got noticed as an offensive lineman is if you missed the block, you know, and the quarterback got hit, or the kicker got, you know, the kick got blocked or whatever. That's the only time you got noticed. I mean, you don't want people to notice you, and you just want water to work.
Yeah, and water is a generational thing. It really is. Like the water that, well, there's an old saying, we grew up drinking out of wells we did not dig.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really true. Like, you know, when Ron Thompson retired, he said, listen, we built this infrastructure. My generation, so he's in his late 70s. He's like, my generation built this for your generation, and you got to pass this on to the next generation. And it's going to be difficult and be hard, but he's like, every generation's done it before you guys, so don't screw it up.
No pressure. Don't screw it up.
Yeah.
build that Warner Valley Reservoir, will you?
Yeah. Well,
get that pipeline done. Yeah.
So we're doing it.
So. Yeah. You have recently spent a lot of time up in Salt Lake, not because you like to ski, although you do like to ski, but because you had a job to do up there with the legislature. Tell us why you were there and what your ultimate goal was, and was it accomplished?
Yeah. So generally when the Utah State Legislature is in session, we'll closely follow maybe two or three bills where I'm actively watching which committee and go up for the committee hearings and everything that exists. This year, we probably had about 35, so almost 10 times more. And the Speaker of the House, Speaker Wilson, you know, he got up and said, this legislative session, it's going to be the water year. And there was a lot of focus and a lot of bills, and they were all over. Some bills we really liked and some bills we did not. But our so as I was going through, one of my jobs is to make sure that policymakers have the best information, the best knowledge to make a correct decision. And so I just had to be there present to make sure that if anybody had questions, I could answer that. And then also to give my two cents about how things are done. So, the legislature did a lot this year. They created, they spent an astronomical amount of money. At least they plan to spend it. And it really was focused on just a lot of water policy. So I just had to spend a lot of time up there watching that and being there present. So, and it's not fun. Like being in Salt Lake City in like mid-February.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I did the state basketball tournament in Logan in February.
Right.
And same experience. That's not a place you really want to hang out that time of year.
No. And it's, but that's how we do it here. So
as the Water Conservancy District Chair or boss, what was your job there? Was it to, if there were questions, just answer them? Or was it to try to influence and push them the direction you need them to go? Or how did that all work?
Kind of both. And so there are some bills that I don't want to say we don't sponsor, but there were certain bills that that were introduced that we would go around advocating for. And so I would go and talk to legislators. I'd say, hey, this is a really good bill, and this is the reason why. And they would ask me questions, or sometimes I'd go and say, hey, this bill is a really bad idea because the reasons why. And whenever I talk to policymakers, I try to give them the good, the bad, and the ugly, like saying, here's the pros and the cons. And so sometimes a lot of times you might have a bill that's just mediocre, but if there's a slight tweak in it, it could be really, really positive. Sometimes there's multiple bills on the same issues. And so you just try to, so so they don't get bogged down. You try to consolidate them to one bill, like we had that with like the grass rebate program. This year we had two bills and they were kind of competing, and that was a great example where it was, we had two different legislators kind of get together and say, hey, we both want the same thing. Let's just tweak it like this. And we got it done. And
good.
So, yeah, but you just, it's one of those things. Part of my job is to be present and to answer those questions. And so, yeah, I think what our legislature did this year, for, at least for water, was spectacular.
If you have a water question, now would be a good time to call 673-5890. I've got a couple of texts I'm going to get to, but right now let's go to the phone line. Hi, you're on with Andy. I'm with Zach. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
I'm going to ask a question. It's not to be funny about it, but and maybe you should know the answer to this question, but do you, either one of you know why the bee population is declining?
Can you ask that? Ask that again. Now you're kind of cut out partway through it. Ask it again.
Okay. Do you know why the bee population is declining?
Oh, bees.
Bees. Okay. Yeah.
You know, I just read articles that this gentleman probably, but I know who he can call. Casey Lofthouse over in Hurricane.
Casey Lofthouse is a bee expert.
He is a bee expert in Washington County. And,
this is not to be funny. I'm just saying.
No, he would know, though. It's
because if you tear out the lawns and other shrubbery, they can.
You're cutting out on me. We're only catching about every other word.
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Oh, much better. Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Anyways, they can't pollinate because of all the we're tearing. I'm one of those that's anti-tear the grass out and that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And my neighborhood, half of the people have, and you can just see the difference in my community because the people that don't want to tear out their lawns are anti those who do, and those who have are anti those who don't want to. So I'm just saying we are losing the bee population because because we don't have enough grass anymore for them to pollinate for the honey and that type of thing. So I'm just saying, I guess I'm glad we're getting all this rain. Hopefully people will wise up and accept it, and hopefully we'll get a lot more. So just want to let you know that.
Okay. All right.
So
thanks
one thing
for the call.
With the turf rebate and grass, one thing that we want is we don't want people just to rip out the grass and then like put concrete. We want landscape conversion. So rip out a very high water demanding plant and replace it with a low yield
demand. Less demanding one, yeah.
And so like if you go up to the desert gardens when it starts to bloom, that place is covered with bees. And we actually have to be careful of that because there are so many bees because there's so many flowering plants. And so in regards to the bees, you know, if you do rip out the grass, you know, plant other plants there is what we really, really want. We don't want just concrete or just rock. We really want desert friendly plants replacing it.
And I don't think Zach has ever said get rid of all your grass.
No.
You know, just take it all out. You know, I mean, I still have a little bit of grass in my yard, but I would say it's maybe 5% of my yard or lower. And you know, I'm okay with that. I think the city is okay with that. I think Zach is okay with that. The grass you want to get rid of, as Zach has said many times on here, if the only time you're ever on your grass is to mow it, that's probably not the grass you want to keep. So.
Exactly.
Okay, big long text here. I'm going to try to summarize it. At a recent safety meeting at my company, there was talk about the Lake Powell pipeline. And one thing I heard in this meeting was that underneath St. George is possibly the nation's, if not the world's, largest aquifer, but it's filled with salt water. Is that true, Zach? Is that, and there's more. Do you know if Zach knows? I heard they would like to figure out how to tap into it and desalinize it.
So it's not the world's big. It's, there is an aquifer down there. Well, we have multiple aquifers, but the one located like right underneath St. George and kind of out by the airport, there is quite a bit of water there, but it is very, very, very high in salinity, like higher than the ocean.
Higher than the ocean, but less than the Great Salt Lake.
It might be higher than the Great Salt Lake.
The Great Salt Lake's pretty salty.
It's pretty nasty water. And so there is ways to treat it. And the only essentially what you do is you put it through reverse osmosis. And it's very, 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 very expensive. And so there's a cost of it. But then the real struggle that we're having from a technical standpoint is all of a sudden you have what's called a brine stream. And so all of a sudden you concentrate that salt. And so all of a sudden you have a lot of salt. And so we have
what do you do with it?
Well, yeah, and we have the same problem with the hot springs. And so I'm really hopeful there is some really cool technology coming out in that regard. And if that technology gets to a point, we would tap into that aquifer. We kind of have already a little bit. Some of the farmers they tap into it and they kind of mix it with other water to kind of do a little bit with it. So there is some water there that is not being utilized, but it's not the world's largest. That's not even close. But no. But there is some water there.
It's a big one, but it's full of salt. It's right now unusable unless we do something to it.
Yeah. Now, there is the deep water aquifer that we're along the Hurricane Fault Line that we're looking at tapping into, and when we filed the water right on that. There were some old oil wells that were drilled along there, and they speculate that there might be some good water down there, but I that's part of the process is going down there and figuring out what's going on. And any more water would be nice, but it's a very, very expensive water, but it's something we're looking at. We're looking at anything right now. Some of the things that, you know, in the 80s people looked at and said, yeah, it's not feasible. We're dusting everything off the shelf now and re-looking at it and re-evaluating it because technology's improved and also the cheaper water's already used up.
Well, and I mean, you know, if you talk about technology and the things that maybe we were unfeasible back then, mm-hmm. Are starting to be feasible. I mean, you look at say criminal DNA, you know, mm-hmm. 30, 40, 50 years ago, DNA didn't, I mean, they couldn't detect it. They couldn't tell anything. Now they're using it regularly to convict criminals. And so we know technology is improving such, and we hope maybe technology will be good enough that we can maybe get the salt out of that water and use it or whatever.
The two challenges with a lot of this is electrical cost. It just demands a huge amount of electricity, mm-hmm. and we're having issues with the electrical grid already and then also just the brine stream. And if we could somehow get a really cheap source of electricity, then that would really open up a lot of avenues. And then if we could figure out a way to deal with the brine stream.
I was going to say brine stream sounds really yucky. Like really, I'm imagining really thick, salty goop.
Yeah, essentially it is. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not goop, it's runny, but it's really...
runny goop.
Yeah, nothing can... It's really, 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 really high. I mean, just imagine the saltiest of salt water that you could ever have. And so you just have to deal with it. You have truckloads full of salt all of a sudden, and you have to deal something.
Got
to
put it somewhere.
And we're actually looking at trying to figure out, is this something that UDOT could take and use on the roads? Is this certain salts? And so that's part of our evaluation, is there something we can take that's kind of a lemon and turn it into lemonade? Is there some way we could, commercialize it to just get rid of it? So that's part of the process we're working on too.
All right. Let's step aside for a second. Be back with more with Zach on the Andy Griffin Show right after this.
This is Mark Levin, and you're listening to the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU. Stay tuned to KDXU for my show at 6 p.m. today.
Welcome back, 9:53 on KDXU. So good to have Zach in town. You know what's weird? Zach has been on my show, what would you say, 30 times maybe, something like that? I think 28 of them or 29 of them, Carrie has been here. She's not here today. It's weird. Are you allowed to speak without her keeping an eye on you? Or?
So it's called the Utah Water Users Association Conference is going on at the Dixie Center right now.
Oh, really?
And so she's down there.
And you probably have to go there when you're done, right?
You know, literally after I leave here, I have to drive down there and give a presentation.
Really?
Yeah. So
on
reuse water. Okay. And so that's where we take sewer water and treat it and what we plan to do with it and the infrastructure. And so it's something that hasn't been utilized a lot here in the state of Utah. So a lot of people are interested and we're kind of leading the charge on that front.
Awesome. Well, I'm honored you would take time away from that to come here.
Oh, this is great. I love coming on the radio. It's a lot of fun.
I appreciate it. All right. A couple of questions from texts. I heard something about Lake Powell not planning on releasing any water to Lake Mead for next year. Is that true?
No. So right now they're required to release at least 7 million acre feet of water every year. And so that's what they're doing. They went to the minimum amount. And they're actually doing an environmental study right now to see if they could to lower that number lower. So right now at the minimum 7, and they would like to, they're talking about putting it all the way down to 5 million. And so they have to have water going down the Grand Canyon. The question is just how much, and they're trying to lower that limit. And so the goal is to try to keep Lake Powell as high as they can.
Okay. Another question, actually not a question, a statement. Sell that brine, what did you call it, brine stream?
Uh-huh.
Sell that brine water to the state for the Great Salt Lake. They truck water all over this country. So
I think it would be great. And you know, the crazy thing is they would probably take it.
They probably would.
It's just the trucking costs, but yeah.
Yeah, just pay for the gas. We'll bring it up to you.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good one. I like that one.
All right, let's go to the phone line. Hey, thanks for calling in. You're on with Zach. What's up?
Hey, you know, I guess the only question I have is we're talking about putting all this money into these different things and all these different ideas, mm-hmm. which are great. I'm not saying let's not do that. But the part that's frustrating to me is I just feel like we need to put a little more energy and pushback on some of these idiot politicians as well as the activist groups. Because I look at it like this. You just said it's been 100 years that we've been trying to get this one reservoir in. Now, all of a sudden, we're going to be able to maybe do it because we traded some land, and I'm kind of going, so does that turtle know that it's not supposed to be on that land? It's supposed to walk over on the other guy's property? Are you going to go out there with sticks and herd the turtles or what? So all it is a big, stupid game in my mind when we could have had years and years of preparing and building more reservoirs, but you have all these activists and all these politicians that have these cockeyed ideas of how it should be, and just like that, now it's okay because we're going to swap some land and whatever. Now those turtles are going to be okay. And it just frustrates me that we don't have more pushback against some of these harebrained ideas of what's holding us back, but yet then we'll turn around and say, oh, we're dying out here. The humans are dying because we don't have water, but hey, we saved the turtle.
I like this
good
guy.
Good statement, yeah.
I don't know who are, but I like, yeah. It is. So someone that's in that room all the time, it drives me nuts. And on the show, you've heard me ranting and raving about some of this stuff a lot. Because these environmental things that are going through. I'm an environmentalist. I care about the environment. I love the environment. I fought for the environment. But this other crap that's going on has nothing to do with it. And it's more political crap like this caller is doing. It's just saying. So I agree. Yeah. It's frustrating.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
You know, the whole Lake Powell pipeline, the biggest pushback has been from the environmentalists.
Oh, yeah.
and they're worried that we're going to ruin habitats and stuff. And it's like, look, we're not going to pipe petroleum or oil or nitroglycerin across hundreds of miles. This is water.
Yeah. If it leaks, the we'll have a little green spot and any animal out there would be happier. And after we bury the pipeline, no bird, tortoise, ant, grasshopper would ever even know it's there. Yeah. That's what's very, very frustrating.
Yeah. So the Warner Valley Reservoir was originally going to be reused water. Is that right?
So originally, back in the day, they were going to take water out of the Virgin River, and we still plan to do that. But now that we're looking at reuse, we're incorporating what would be the Warner Valley into that reuse project. And so...
Does that mean the water would not be capable of having wildlife and fish and stuff?
Oh, no. No, in fact, it'll be great. So
really? Okay.
There'll be motors, you can water ski on Warner Valley. It'll be big enough to do that. And then it's actually going to be deeper than our other two reservoirs, and so there'll be cooler water at the bottom of it, and so there'll probably be really good fishing in it too.
Maybe some big fish that live there years and years and years.
Yeah, and some like trout or something like that, because it'll be deeper down there where it'll be a little bit colder, and so we'll have to see. I'm not a fish biologist, so I don't know exactly, but when I've talked to other people, they're like, well, it'll be a lot cooler down there, and so we can look at some different fish.
It's the old joke about the guy that lost his ring, his wedding ring, fishing, and years later he caught this big old fish, and he was cutting into it, he hit something solid, and he's like, hey, maybe this fish swallowed my ring. When he pulled the fish open to see what he'd cut into, it turned out it was his finger. And, yeah. Not particularly funny, but maybe there's some kind of point in there.
Yeah.
About what our expectations are. Well, he's Zach Renstrom. Zach is going to go do a big, giant presentation. I guess we're not allowed. It's not...
You had to pay to go to the conference, but yeah. My presentation is only for the extreme nerds.
The king of the nerds, Zach Renstrom.
Thanks.
Thank you, Zach, for coming on. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Back tomorrow, we've got Natalie Larson on the program tomorrow talking city issues. She's not a mayor, but she's a councilman. We'll talk to her then.